නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස ဧතං සන්තං ဧතං පනීතං යදිදං උපේක්ඛාති. Dear Dhamma friends, we last time started to discuss Indriya Bhavana Sutta, which is the last sutta available in Majjhima Nikaya, and which refers how Buddha expects us to develop our six faculties. Now we know we have six faculties: eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. Now these faculties, when they are dealing with the corresponding outside objects, that is eye with sights or forms, then ear with sounds, nose with smells, tongue with various tastes, body with various tangibles, and mind with mind objects. So whenever they are dealing with various such objects, so there could be some sort of an agitation, some sort of an excitation happen in the mind. Now this is something that we constantly or every day we are experiencing, because this correspondence, these transactions happens every time. So whenever we are keeping our eyes open, there are various objects, there are various sights coming through the eye, and it does not stay there, but sometimes it makes some sort of an agitation, sort of a turmoil in the mind. So mind become somehow agitated, and again losing our peace. So Buddha recommends here that we have to bring back our mind back to that peaceful state, equanimous state, which we are experiencing. And here the equanimity Buddha talks here is not the typical mundane type of equanimity, that also we have to recognize. So this equanimity is not something based on some sort of a timid kind of equanimity. Say for example, there may be a person who is little timid or afraid of everyone, and so he can't do anything. As a result of that, whenever someone blames, he simply keep his he show kind of an indifference. And when someone is sort of praising, that also he couldn't really recognize. So that is actually based on ignorance. So such ignorant kind of equanimity is not meant here, but more deep equanimity is something meant here. So the equanimity that we are talking here is based on the practice. So whenever you are developing mindfulness, you are recognizing various sense impingement happening through the senses every time, and there you may understand how these various objects coming and going, or the corresponding transactions happening again and again, and that is quite momentary. Say for example, if you are dealing with the ayatana, the various sense bases, typically they are very much like sleeping, but whenever a trigger happens, they start to sort of activated. So once they are activated, then some sort of a agitation happened to the mind. As a result of that, mind again get on to some excited state. So we lost that equanimity. Again and again, when one see this process again and again, so the impermanent nature can be very well understood, and the unsatisfactory nature of this whole process can be understood. And again, the non-self nature can be understood. And if you are doing this again and again, so you become somewhat disillusioned, or somewhat disenchantment is arising because of this understanding. So then what mind does is that it is letting go of this whole process and trying to recognize its own kind of a freedom, free from any of this excitement. So it is now reducing grasping, and it is going through a letting go process. As a result of that, now the mind become secluded, now the mind become equanimous, free from any association, free from any grasping, and that is equanimous. So that is the equanimity we are talking here. And this is not the only way to reach there, but there are many methods explained in the Mahasatipatthana Sutta. Say for example, you are practicing elements meditation and you are keeping your attention to the body, and body is showing various element characteristics. Sometimes there may be vibration, sometimes there may be heat, sometimes cold, and sometimes hardness, sometimes softness. So likewise, there are many different kinds of element characteristics one can recognize when you are keeping your attention to the body. So more and more you are closely keeping your attention, you understand constantly it is subjected to this sort of manifestation of various elements. Now even during the walking, you can recognize that. So whenever your foot is touching the ground, so there are the hardness, softness. So likewise, different elements are manifesting. So when you continuously recognize all these element manifestations, so you understand it is not me, it is not mine, it is not myself, but it's a matter of manifestation of various elements, and it is common to this very body and it is common to the outside as well. So this very understanding, the understanding things as they truly are, actually lead into the dispassion. Because more and more what you understand is not in a way promoting any kind of a self-view. Instead, it is promoting understanding. So that understanding actually leads to letting go, to relinquishment of grasping. Now the mind recognizes some sort of a possibility of being alone or secluded without any attachment, without any grasping. So this is how one may understand that proper kind of equanimity. So that is the equanimity which is referred in this sutta. So Buddha mentioned, so this equanimity is peaceful, this equanimity is sublime, and this equanimity is something that we have to associate. So whenever I see an form, as a result of that, if the mind become agitated, if the mind become excited, either into the positive or to the negative, or the mixture of both, or that is agreeable or disagreeable, or mixture of both, so then Buddha ask us to return back to that original equanimous state without holding on to this new agitated state. And he is teaching us three methods to reflect in order to return to that previous equanimous state. So that we discussed last time. So one method is to recognize it as conditioned. The newly formed state is a conditioned state, because we understood that in the Madhupindika Sutta, so whenever a sense base is corresponding with its corresponding phenomena, the outside object, so there is a eye consciousness arising. I mean, whatever the sense object corresponding to that, the corresponding consciousness arise. Say for example, if eye is dealing with the form, then the eye consciousness arise. That is how we get to know. And then we don't stop there. So when it is happening again and again, so these three very much represent like a presence of three phenomena, and it leads to the arising of friction, or the passa particularly. So passa, or the contact. So that contact causes feeling, vedana, and when one feels, then one cognizes, or one recognizes. And when one recognizes, then it leads to generate various kinds of thoughts around that process. Now we are generating various kinds of thoughts in this direction, that direction, related to the past, related to the future. So likewise, many thinking processes are now in effect, now going into effect. And ultimately it leads to kind of a overwhelming kind of thinking. And ultimately we become a victim of that very thinking process. So that we call as mental proliferation or conceptual proliferation, papancha. So that we understood through our discussions of the Madhupindika Sutta. So we understand now this agitated state of mind is a result of that mental proliferation. So it actually won't take long time, within couple of seconds. Within couple of seconds it can happen. Now for our understanding, Buddha and that Venerable Mahakacchana has explained them very beautifully for us to understand how the whole process is evolving. And Buddha asks us to apply that knowledge here. When we understand now mind has agitated, so this agitated state is conditioned. So it went through that constructing process. So we are the one participating into that process. We are the one interfering that process. And we are adding, we are constructing. So as a result of that construction, we become agitated. So if we are able to recognize that construction process, that formations, that fabrication, then it can't continue. It's a matter of paying wise attention, yoniso manasikara, to that very process. And as a result of that, now we are in a better position to overcome that proliferation, to stop that proliferation. And as a result of that, we are in a position to return back to that peaceful, sublime kind of equanimity. So similarly, Buddha mentioned another method. So to see this agitated state as gross, because there is some turmoil, there is some kind of an agitation, there is a excitement in the mind, which is gross compared to that very simple, very calm, very peaceful state which we had, which is equanimous. So Buddha asked us to see this difference. Previously we were in a very calm, peaceful, a sublime kind of a state, and there is no friction at all. But now the situation is different, and we feel that burden, we feel that agitation, we feel that heaviness in the mind. So that is gross. So when you are able to look at it through the mindfulness, actually it's very much like you step back and watch the state of the mind. So that again helps us to kind of disengage in this process, to avoid participating into this process, and to look at it objectively. And as a result of that, now you are in a better position to stop this proliferation, stop this agitation. And because you look at it objectively, you are not a participant in that process. Rather, you are simply witnessing that process. You are observing that process from a mindfulness perspective. Now, as a result of that, now you can return back to that equanimity. And Buddha encouraged that process. That returning is something that Buddha encouraged. Etam santam, etam panitam, yadidam upekkha. So he is sort of encouraging us, see, look at. So that equanimity is much better. That is not agitated. That is more simple. That is sublime. So return back to that state. So that is another method that Buddha mentioned here in this Indriya Bhavana Sutta. The other method he asks us to see is the dependent arising. Now this agitated state does not happen without any reason, without any cause. It has went through a very interesting causal process. So if you are able to use wise attention to look back how this has evolved, how this has generated. So as I mentioned in the Madhupindika Sutta, it is well explained by Venerable Mahakacchana. So he says, when eye and form is available, because of that, then the eye consciousness arises. When the eye consciousness is there, when it is present, we can show the manifestation of passa, the contact. When contact is present, which is available, then we can say, okay, there's a possibility of manifestation of feeling. When the feeling is available, then the manifestation of perception, recognition. And when such is available, then we are prone to think. We are thinking in many different ways. So that recognition, that perceptions are leading to these different kinds of thinking. So when that thinking going on and on, ultimately it leads to mental proliferation. So there's a very beautiful causal relationship, kind of a chain reaction happens here. So Buddha asks us to look at that. How we went through this whole process in order to reach this agitated state. So these are the three methods that Buddha teaches us here in this Indriya Bhavana Sutta, and we can say these are some Chittanupassana techniques. So we are doing the mindfulness on mind, and in order to maintain calmness, equanimity, and to return back to that non-grasping state, so we are using these techniques. And it doesn't mean that we have to use all these three techniques. We can use any of them. I mean, whatever is convenient, we can use. Whatever we remember, we can use. Point is to return back to that original state as quickly as possible. So for each sense base, so Buddha is giving a very beautiful simile, kind of an analogy. So there Buddha mentioned, when the agitation happened because of an eye, kind of a correspondence with the form, so return back to that equanimity like you open your eyes and then you are closing your eye, kind of a blink of an eye, you got to return back. So that is the reference Buddha is given. So you can see how quickly one has to return. As I mentioned last time, so you can't achieve this kind of a speed immediately. So it may take some time at the beginning because we are fond of mental proliferation and produce some amount of pleasure. So as a result of that, we may enjoy it. And when we understand the gross nature, when we understand the burden, when we understand the heaviness, when we understand the tension, stress, etc., in the present agitated state, then only probably we get an intention to return back. So that also could be very little difficult because our mind is now subjected to that mental proliferation. We are a victim. So in order to go out of it and look at it objectively, it may take some time, need some practice. So assume that you are able to return back after 5 minutes. Now, without giving up, without getting discouraged, if you continue this practice, now after some time you may be returned back within 4 minutes. And I have again with the continuous practice, now you are able to return there within 2 minutes, within 1 minute, within 30 seconds. So likewise, you are improving. Now, because as our mindfulness growing, so we are able to recognize this process at its very early stages. So you are not now participating into the mental proliferation for a long time, but at its very early stages, you are able to recognize it. As a result of that, it is not strong. It is somewhat weak. So when we are paying attention to that, whenever we become mindful or aware of that process, that very mindfulness may be enough to return back to that original state. So that is how we are developing. So that is how we are reaching this level that Buddha expects, that as a blink of an eye that you are able to return back to that equanimity. Similarly, Buddha mentioned when one hears a sound, one may be able to return back to that equanimous state with a snap of his fingers. And when one smells an odor, one's mind become agitated, one's mind sort of going through some agreeable, disagreeable, or both kind of a state, and as a result of that, if the mind become excited, so to return back to that original calm, equanimous state, like a kind of a water bubble dropping from a lotus leaf. So very quickly it may drop, it may roll off. And then similarly, Buddha mentioned if whenever you are going through some food, say when you are having your meals, if your mind become agitated, So to return back to that calmness, like you spit out a ball of spittle. And then when you go through some sort of a touching sensation, as a result of that, if your mind getting excited. So rather than staying there, Buddha asks us to return back to that unagitated calmness, like you flex your extended hand, or like you are flexing your like you are extending your flexed hand. So that quickly, one is very easily one can achieve that. So this, as you can see, all these similes show us kind of a practical aspect. So these are not merely some theoretical explanations. Rather, one has to practice again and again. Then only one would be able to reach these kinds of state. So as I mentioned, you can't achieve these levels or these references immediately. Definitely it will take a lot of time. But with time, one would be able to achieve this kind of a speed. So that is why Buddha is encouraging. Buddha is motivating us to reach this kind of a level of equanimity. And similarly, if one going through kind of a mind object, now there is not the five senses involved here, but the mind is taking some kind of a past memory or kind of a future object, imagination, and as a result of that, mind itself getting agitated, become burdened. So there also Buddha asks us to recognize it and to return back to that equanimous state. So there the simile given is that one has a red hot iron plate, and to which if we put a few drops of water, it quickly evaporates. It won't take long time. So similarly, Buddha asks us to return back to this equanimity. So this is the kind of similes and the processes, methods explained for a practitioner. Suppose one is continuously doing this, as a result of that, through this practice, continuous practice, one become free from sakkaya ditti, that personality view, free from various grasping into various rituals, and free from any doubt. So then he is reaching to the level of noble person. He become an Arya, a noble person, and there again he has to continue. That is also explained in this sutta. Now, for a noble person with some developed faculties, now his faculties are now fairly developed by going through this whole process. Now, Buddha recommends another way of practice to that person, because that person has gone through this process and he has a lot of practical experience, and he knows the value of that equanimity, and he knows where his mind has to be kept. But unfortunately, due to some reasons, still his mind gets agitated. So that is also something interesting that we have to understand. So even though we call him a noble person, Arya Puggala, still his mind gets agitated. So that is why Buddha again referred another method for him to practice. So he is also still prone to various defilements, and as a result of that, his mind gets agitated. He also may be prone to mental proliferation. But here, he doesn't need to go through that little tedious kind of previous processes, like recognizing it as conditioned or as Ross, or and to recognize how we constructed that whole process, how it is dependently arisen. So those are little technical, and it might take some time, and it may be a little tiresome, but that is actually the only method available for a beginner. But when one become more and more skillful in that whole process, now he can quickly return back to that equanimity. Now here, Buddha points out another method to the seeker, to a trainee, to a noble person, that he become ashamed of this agitated state, because he very well understood the value of equanimity, he very well understood this futile nature of this whole constructing process, this proliferation he very well understood, but still mind does it. So he is ashamed of that, what the mind is doing. And he become repelled what the mind is doing. He become sort of humiliated about what the mind is doing. He become disgusted about what the mind is doing. So this is a kind of a attitude change happen in his mind. Now typically, worldly people, Buddha mentioned, are fond of mental proliferation. They are sort of addicted to this mental proliferation. Whenever they have some rest time, whenever they want to relax, they, instead of relaxing, what they do is they think. Thinking on and on. So ultimately they become depressed or obsessed and went through various stresses. So they become somewhat crazy about this thinking. But on the other hand, when one becomes noble, the opposite is there. He doesn't appreciate it, mental proliferation. He doesn't welcome it. Instead, when the mind does it, he become ashamed of it. He become repelled by that. And he become humiliated through that process. Disgusted about what mind is doing. So that very attitude is enough for him to return back to that equanimity. So suppose his mind is seeing some object. As a result of that, if it is an agreeable one, then if his mind become excited, and he has lost that equanimity, then he simply look at it with some ashamedness or some kind of a disgusting way. See, he understand it because he is keep on trying to maintain that equanimity because that is the least frictional path, the non-grasping state. But unfortunately, again mind went and grasped. So he doesn't approve it. So he simply look at the mind with a shameful manner. So with a disgusting way. So I can simply give a kind of a simile. Again, that very much like, say for example, you are taking care of a child. And you assume that at the end of the day, you have washed him and put new clothes and everything. And now you want to keep him clean. But this child again went and put his hand to something muddy or something dirty. Now you have to again wash his hand. Now you become a little disgusted. You are not happy about what the child is doing. So you have this sort of a nature, this sort of a attitude towards what the child is doing. So similarly, our mind is also quite childish. So even though theoretically we understand the value of this whole teaching, even though we are practicing diligently, still sometimes mind is somewhat mischievous. Sometimes it is not hearing to us. Sometimes it is not tamed enough. So the mental, the habitual tendencies are sometimes become very strong. So we can't maintain that equanimity. So again, mind go and grasp. So that is where we are not approving. That is where the noble person is not approving. That is where he become disgusted about the activity of what mind is doing. So as a result of that, Buddha mentioned, so the mind returns back. So probably, even before you become a noble person, still one can try to apply this method as well. There is no harm. If you are trying hard to keep your mind at that equanimous state, and again the mind is going and grasping, you are not approving it. So you are looking at it with a non-approving way. As you are sort of looking at a child who is now trying to touch some dirt. Now you are simply paying your attention. You are, somewhat trying to warn him. So because of your warning, he might stop. Because child now understood that it is not good, it's not correct to touch dirt right now. Because now my mom has clean me. So he know it, but still he like to do it. So that is the very nature that our mind also has. So even though theoretically we understood it, even though enough practice is done, still the mind is sometimes careless and subjected to various addictions, subjected to various latent tendencies. So when one understands it, one is applying one's mindfulness and paying attention and not approving that process, and as a result of that, mind returns back. So this is the method Buddha recommends for the noble person. And in this sutta, so Buddha talks to a completely enlightened person as well. So when he is talking about completely developed faculties, to a person with completely developed faculties, that is a fully enlightened person, so he is in command of his faculties. Now, he is not a victim of the latent tendencies, rather he can manipulate any way he likes. He can control any way he likes the mind. So here Buddha mentioned, so whenever assume that he sees something, and if that thing is something agreeable, something beautiful, if he likes, he can have a kind of a pleasant kind of a mentality. If he likes, he can have a neutral kind of a mentality. If he likes, even he can have a kind of a loathsome kind of a mentality. So he is not approving. So he can actually play as he likes. So this is the kind of a commandment or the controllability a completely developed faculty person or an arahant is having. Sometimes in Pali we call it as arahant vikurvana, where he is in full command of his mind. It depends on his attitude at that time. It's very much like he is playing as he likes. So if he want, he can have a pleasurable feeling, pleasant kind of a state. If he want, he can maintain the equanimity. If he want, he can have even the negative. We can't say it's negative, rather we can say repulsive. And even if we go through something repulsive, something, assume that he sees something dirty, there also he can do whatever he like. So even by seeing that, he can even keep his mind pleasant, or he can keep his mind equanimous, and he can maintain see that also as repulsive and have a kind of a, we can't say negative, but he can actually manipulate as he like. That's what we can say here. So if he simply want to maintain the equanimity, which we have talked before, he can maintain that as well. So he is not agitated at all. So if he wants to continue his equanimity, even he see a beautiful thing, his equanimity is not broken or not disturbed. Even if he see something ugly, his equanimity is not broken or disturbed. So his equanimity is unchanged. He is unshakable. His mind is basically unshakable. So this is the level that Buddha mentioned, that fully developed faculties are giving us. So the completely, he is in full command of his faculties. Faculties can't guide him, or faculties can't manipulate him or his mind. Rather, he is incapable of changing the way he is perceiving the whole process. Now you can see how Buddha has taken us to many different levels. So at the beginning, it's a matter of simply developing mindfulness. We couldn't actually change our mind back to an equanimity, and we don't even know what is this equanimity. And we might even become somewhat doubtful about such equanimity. So that is where we started. But as you practice Satipatthana, so slowly you may understand how to be mindful, at least. Not yet somewhat equanimous, but at least how to become mindful. How not to participate into the process. How not to sort of carelessly, impulsively react. How to step back and look at something. So that is how we start. And later, as you develop, now you understand the sort of behavior of various phenomena. How they are arising, how they are quickly passing away. So likewise, you are developing more and more wisdom. As a result of that, you are in a better position to sort of look at them objectively. Now you know what is mindfulness. Now you know how to look at them objectively. You become more and more skillful in that process. And as a result of that, the length of mindfulness also improves. And the quality of mindfulness also improves. And not only that, you can have clear comprehension. You can very clearly recognize various phenomena and their behavior. As a result of that, now you get the true, you understand the true nature of various phenomena, all the phenomena. Even though they have their individual characteristics, now your mind is more interested about their common characteristics, how transient they are, how unsatisfactory they are, and how uncontrollable they are, and how there is no essence or any core in it. So likewise, in many different ways, now the wisdom is growing. And as a result of that, now mind is recognizing kind of a freedom, where mind is not established anywhere. Mind is not grasping anything. Mind is not associating with anything. Not become colored or not conditioned. So this kind of equanimity is now mind is recognizing. So that also has to be developed. So the momentary understanding of this is not enough. So one has to develop that understanding and that mind state more and more. As a result of that, now you are able to maintain that for, say, 5 minutes. Maintain that for 10 minutes. Maintain that for 15 minutes. So likewise, you are improving. So after that only, it becomes kind of a inner nature or kind of a home position of the mind. So then you can abide by that equanimity for a long time. Even while during the walking, you can keep maintain your mind there. Even while having your meals, you can maintain your mind there. And even you are, say, washing clothes, you are maintaining your mind there. So likewise, now you have to familiarize with this equanimity. It becomes your second nature or the first nature. Because that is the most least frictional path. So now Buddha further requests us to apply this information, what is given in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, to further strengthen, to avoid any agitation, to maintain the balance of the mind. So then one is becoming a noble person and he can easily maintain that, and ultimately one becomes an arahant. So here, in a way, in this Indriya Bhavana Sutta, a complete development or complete practice is elaborated. So after Buddha giving this discourse, therefore Buddha mentioned, or rather encouraged Venerable Ananda and the other monks, now that I have taught you all this information. And these are the routes available. These are the, you know, the forests available. These are the secluded places available. Don't become careless or don't become ignorant. And I am, as a teacher, who is welcoming your welfare, have given this teaching. So now Buddha encourages monks to go and meditate. So this also sometimes Buddha does after he delivers a very interesting teaching or very practical teaching. When he preaches such kind of a teaching, he actually encourages monks. he actually encourages the others, because now he has taught a full path, full practical approach. Now, if one simply intellectually understand that, it is not helpful. I mean, it is also helpful, but that is not the real goal. The real goal is the achievement. Real goal is the real realization of this whole thing. So one has to practically do it. So that is where Buddha encouraged at the end of this sutta, because he mentioned here what should be done for his disciples out of compassion by a teacher who seeks their welfare and has compassion for them. That I have done for you. So this is a kind of a, you know, like a father telling to his children. So father has given a very interesting teaching, and he wants to see his children are growing. Likewise, Buddha is making final remarks. There are these roots of trees, these empty huts. Meditate, Ananda, do not delay, or else you will regret it later. This is our instruction to you. Now you can see, after delivering this practical sutta, Buddha tell the monks not to become heedless. So to be heedful, to be diligent in one's practice. Because if we neglect this, so then we become somewhat regrettable at the end of our life, or we couldn't do it when we are in a better position to do it. So likewise, we might have to regret because we didn't practice diligently. So here, this practical sutta is quite, Indriya Bhavana Sutta is quite relevant to our practice, Vipassana practice. And again, the methods described are well explained in the Madhupindika Sutta. So there is a very good relationship between these two suttas. And again, it is relevant to especially to Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, where one is dealing with the mind and trying to maintain that equanimity and to have an unagitated mind, unshakable mind, and to maintain the inner calm or the inner clarity, the mental clarity, etc. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon, Sutta teaching, and with that actually we are concluding the Indriya Bhavana Sutta as well. So I now like to allow to ask questions either related to this today's teaching or something related to your own practice.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu. So if we have any new friends joining us, welcome. You may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can send them to me via the chat. So Bhante, one question is, respective Bhante, I understand that papancha is harmful, no doubt. I used to have a lot of critical negative thinking, including much fear and doubts. This was very painful and could lead to much confusion at times. Lately, there is an awful lot of thinking indeed, which is hard to stop, but the contents are less painful, also not so much leading to a fundamental insecurity or confusion. So now the thinking is much less torturing, but still, it's mental proliferation and should be stopped. I'm not very successful at it. Actually, I feel pretty much fail at it. In a way, I find it gladdening and fascinating how the content or quality of the thoughts has changed into something more positive. And this makes the stilling of the papancha more difficult, as it is not directly generating as much pain as it used to. Respected Bhante, I'd appreciate your comment on this. Thank you.
Yeah. They also, as our mindfulness improves, the sensitivity of mind also improves. Because the sensitive mind only can understand the gross nature of this prapancha or this mental proliferation. Otherwise, what happens is our mind is also quite gross, it's not sensitive, and it keep on thinking, and we start to encourage it, and again we start to enjoy it. So that is the typical nature. So whenever we start to practice mindfulness, so where we are trying to keep our attention is not that attractive. So for example, assume that you are used to watch movies.
and it is making you a lot of excited, and it is makes your mind agitated. But now when you are practicing mindfulness, suppose you are simply mindfully walking, where you have to keep your attention is a very ordinary process. Your foot is touching the ground and it is making a kind of a equanimous feeling, and it is not so exciting. But you are trying to keep your attention, by the way. Again and again you are doing it. Now as a result of that, what happens? Now that excitement becomes less and less, but the maintenance of your mind in a very calm, equanimous process becomes more and more. Now mind is slowly evolving, slowly changing from that gross exciting level to this very equanimous calm level. Now as a result of that, the sensitivity improves. Now mind understands, okay, it is better to stay like this rather than getting burnt by looking at those exciting shows or films or whatever it is. So the mind itself has this recognition. Mind itself has its own, say, wisdom to understand the value of this process. Now, as you mentioned, then slowly mind start to replace those exciting movies and all these things with this less harmful type of thing. And as you mentioned, now it is not that harmful, and now it is not that, say, burning. So as a result of that, you may still continue this proliferation, but it is not that harmful. But later, that also you may understand. So for example, I can refer you Vedha Vitakka Sutta, available in Majjhima Nikaya. There Buddha explained how he went through this kind of a process. He mentioned that whenever he is thinking something, actually before he become the Buddha, he understood how his mind is behaving. And he is explaining that he understood that most of the time he is thinking about some past incident, the sensual pleasures he had. As a result of that, the lust is arising. And less time about the future and the present. Because past is something that he went through a lot of pleasurable states as a king or as a prince. Now, when he understood that, he is sort of understanding where this kind of a thinking, this sort of lustful thinking is harmful to me, and it is harmful to another person. And this kind of angry thinking is harmful to me, harmful to another person. And it is destroying whatever the recent mindfulness, wisdom, and it is detrimental to the practice. So as a result of that, he is basically understanding the disadvantages of this kind of thinking. Now he is replacing that thinking with the opposite. So instead of lust, he is now thinking about the renunciation. Instead of anger, he is now thinking about loving kindness. So likewise, kind of a replacement process is going on. Now after he is completely eliminated this harmful thinking, the negative thinking, lust, hatred, delusion and all those kinds of defilements, now his mind is continuing with this wholesome thinking. Now it's a kind of a replacement process, a kind of a gradual process. So you can't immediately stop, but what you did is strategically, so you have stopped harmful, negative type of thinking, and now you have replaced it with a less harmful or less vulnerable, neutral kind of thinking. And then Buddha mentioned, even though now the mind is thinking something wholesome, later he understood whenever he is doing that for a long time, his mind becomes somewhat, you know, tiresome about it. Because this thinking is an energy-consuming process. So there he say, I am feeling tired when the mind is continuously thinking like this, even though it is wholesome. Now I simply stopped this thinking and kept the mind silent. And that is more peaceful. That is more calm. Now he understood the value of the inner silence. So therefore, you also may understand, So even though mind is thinking something wholesome again and again for long, long time, it generates some amount of tiredness to the mind, tiredness to the body. You feel, you know, little burden because of this thinking. How about stopping thinking if it is not necessary? Assume that you don't need anything to think right now, but mind is continuously thinking on something wholesome. How about stopping that even? And to keep the mind quiet, you can do it. So once you do that, then Buddha say, so that is more peaceful, that is more calm. And therefore he mentioned, there is a state which is with thoughts or with sustained thought, and there is another samadhi, another level without applied thought and without a sustained thought, without vitakka vichara. And between these two concentration types, he say the second one, which is free from applied thought, which is free from sustained thought, basically which is free from vitakka and vichara, so that one is more sublime than the previous one, because this is more calm, this is more sort of peaceful. So therefore it's a kind of a gradual process. So I hope so you may understand the value of inner silence rather than even in this wholesome way of thinking. Yeah. You can go to the next section.
Okay. I'd like to invite Chitra to please ask the next question.
Still we can't hear you. And now it's unmuted. You can talk now. We can't hear you, by the way.
Hi. Yeah. Baby, you may ask your question. It looks like you are unmuted, but we cannot hear you for some reason. Maybe we can come back to her question. You may want to try to log off and log back in again. For some reason, we can't hear you.
Seems to have a problem with her mic, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. I think she's going to try to re-log in.
Yeah.
Bente, so I have a question about my practice.
Right.
So my work recently has been very, very busy.
Mm-hmm.
And then this past weekend, when I gave myself a mini retreat, 2-day mini retreat, I noticed there was so much thinking in the background, but kind of like a subtle thinking. It's not in the foreground, like a very clear thought forming. Sometimes I can catch like the clear thoughts, but most of the time it's in the background. And mine is staying on the body. But I just wanted to check, Bhante, in terms of the method, when something like that happens, do we just stay on the body and the elements, noticing of the elements, and then naturally those thoughts will subside the more we're able to stay on the body? Or should I switch over at this point and just pay attention to the thoughts themselves? Because I do notice that in the beginning, more often, sometimes I do get carried away with the thoughts. It somehow goes from the background into the foreground without me noticing. But as time with the mini retreat goes on, obviously, you know, more mindfulness is developed and I can catch it sooner. But Bhante, I wanted to check on what's the right method to address this situation?
Yeah, so I think as you said, when we are not in a position to sort of continue our practice, and when too much work is involved and too much talking and thinking is involved, So sometimes we lose the balance. So as a result of that, again, proliferation can happen. So at that time, probably we have to go back to the basics. Sometimes, as you mentioned, maybe to look recognize the ailment characteristics or even recognize the breathing. So likewise, again, we have to sort of strengthen our mindfulness. So after we strengthen the mindfulness, now we are in a better position to directly watch the mind, directly watch various thinking. Because recognizing that thinking and face to face, understanding that what is going on, and allowing them to pass naturally, giving them some time and being patient with them and allowing them to calm down would be the most healthy way of practice. But in order to reach that, you need to strengthen mindfulness. Even that has become somewhat weaker because of this continuous other activities, etc. Now, in order to get into the proper practice, first we have to go to the basics, maybe through anapanasati or maybe through walking or maybe by recognizing various element characteristics. So those are actually helpful to avoid mental proliferation and again establish ourselves in the mindfulness. And once established, we can actually look at the mind directly and understand these thoughts, because we understood the proper perspective. You can step back and watch it, and you can maintain distance and watch it, and then you are not participating, then you are not a victim, and then it may start to fade away. So that is what I like to say about this.
So thank you, Bhante. And you mentioned, you know, develop the mindfulness up to a certain threshold and I can watch the mind. How do I know that enough mindfulness is established, or do I just try to maybe experiment and see if I can't pay attention to the mind? If I can't, then come back to the basics.
Yeah, so that is that you can recognize, because the mental proliferation become weaker, as you mentioned. So sometimes it appears like it is in the front or it is in the foreground. It's compulsively thinking. But another level is that thinking is going on like a background process, not a foreground real activity, but like a passive background process. So that means it has somewhat weakened. So there you can start to watch. So if you are able to recognize this shift, previously I was under the proliferation and it is in the foreground and I am becoming a sort of victim to it. But now, as a result of the mindfulness practice or anapanasati or elements or whatever it is, now I have given prominence to these feelings and the present moment phenomena. And slowly, as a result of that, the front proliferation has become somewhat weaker, because I haven't strengthened it. Instead, I have diverted my attention to this another process, mindfulness process. As a result of that, not getting enough strength through myself, so the proliferation has become weaker and now it has gone to the background. There, probably you can give a try. Now you can simply drop anapanasati. Now you can pay direct attention to that thinking, and you are in a better position to slowly let it go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Bhante. Yeah, because I notice when the mental thinking is in the background, I'm paying attention to the body, but it doesn't seem to stop. And so I think you're right. I need to make the switch over to watching the thoughts itself.
Yeah. Because, these thoughts also come due to some reason. I mean, there may be some unfinished job, there may be some unattended things. As a result of that, I mean, it is again and again bugging us. But if we are able to look at it properly, objectively, and give a reasonable answer, and convince ourselves, okay, don't worry, I have enough time, I can do it later, this is not the time. So likewise, we have to convince ourselves, we have to give some kind of a solution for the moment, so then it will, calm down. So basically, we have to apply wisdom here, not simply the suppression. Now, actually, by diverting our attention to something physical, we do little kind of a suppression, not really answering the issue. But later, we understand why this is still coming on, why it is still interfering. So we have to understand the real cause, and then we can give a better answer.
Oh, okay. So applying a little bit of manasikara is okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And thank even you actually, you can apply this Madhupindika Sutta as well, and the Indriya Bhavana Sutta also.
Thank you.
Okay, Chitadevi, let's try again. Hopefully, we can unmute now.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me now, Jennifer? Yes, we can. Loud and clear. Yes.
Thank you very much. Bhante, you have kind of partially answered the question, but what I really wanted to have in my mind was you said there were three ways of dealing with mental proliferation, and the first was to become mindful. That was the first step, and then you said look at this thought that it is a conditioned state and it's gross, and the third was it is a think of the thought as a related to the dependent origination. Now have I got that correctly?
No, actually mindfulness is required to all these three processes, all these three methods, and the methods are mentioned as you are looking at it like condition, sankata, that is one aspect, gross is the other aspect, and dependently arisen is the third aspect.
Third aspect.
So in order to understand all these three sides, you require mindfulness. Mindfulness becomes somewhat a prerequisite in this whole process, and how you are looking at it. Either you look at it to understand its conditioned nature. So either you understand it, the gross nature, or either you understand how dependently arisen this.
But they are all interconnected, isn't it?
Definitely.
Dependent origination is the right one.
I mean, all these, yes. I mean, these three characteristics, or all these are there. But the way we look at it differ, yes.
And also in the other sutta, it also said, or some other sutta that I read, was that you can replace it with a different thought, a better thought. Can that also be done?
Yeah, that is.
If you are having a thought of ill will, then you can replace with some metta thought.
Yeah, that is another method. But you know, this Indriya Bhavana method is, I can say, more appropriate as you are getting more skillful and you become more confident in your practice, because you are directly understanding more subtle aspects of the thinking. Now, say when anger is going on, rather than you are understanding the real causes and how it is conditioned and those type of thing. So if you simply replace it with the loving kindness, so you are giving a temporary solution.
Uh-huh.
But here, so when anger is there, you are directly dealing with it and you understand how you created this anger, how you have participated. Uh-huh. So what are the components that you have added from your own vocabulary? So likewise, you are directly dealing with the problem rather than you are trying to put a temporary solution.
Yes.
So this is more advanced in that sense. So, I mean, of course, this could be a little difficult at the beginning. So that's why various other methods are also recommended. But once your faculties become sharpened and you can clearly recognize anger as anger, lust as lust, and all these different kinds of thinking as that way. So then we are in a better position to look at it properly. I mean, so this actually shows us the real nature. We are not trying to replace it with something else and have a solution. Rather, we face to face understand its real nature. So the real behavior we understand, how the whole process has constructed, what are its disadvantages, how I feel because of this. So how it has gone through some dependently arisen process. So this is more, you know, more wise in a way, we can say.
Yes, and you also mentioned about, which I mean, you said, go through the elements, you said, apply the principles of the elements, which I wasn't quite sure where we apply that.
No, that is because of the, you know, this Jennifer's question, that she said sometimes when she has engaged too much other activities and couldn't practice enough, so again the proliferation has come to the surface and now she has become a victim. Now sometimes what she did was to practice element meditation, so that is also a type of a replacement process. You know, you are rather than directly dealing with the thinking, now you actually diverted your attention to elements. So also a replacement process. So after you through that process, after you are able to develop some amount of mindfulness, now you can address the issue directly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And one other thing that I sometimes do, and I just want to run it past you, is that when this mental proliferation arises, I also look at the anatta nature, because I mean it's beyond our control. It just suddenly happened and it's just going on, and it's really not me who's doing it. Can I also put that principle?
Can, no problem. Because now in typical Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, various methods are given. I mean, you can even understand how impermanent this is. Now, in order to look at it, in order to understand it, main thing is that you should not participate into the process. You should be able to step back and watch it objectively. Then only it will naturally fade away, naturally cease. Because until you participate, it may not stop, because you are strengthening it. But whenever you stop your participation and you are able to step back and maintain kind of a distance and look at it objectively, that means you are not strengthening it. Now it becomes impermanent. So you can look at this impermanent nature. And similarly, you can be dispassionate about this whole process. And again, once they have gone, now you can see the cessation. Now it has gone. Now kind of a peace. And the attitude which you have is the kind of letting go, kind of relinquishment. So anicca-anupassi, viraga-anupassi, nirodha-anupassi, patinissagga-anupassi are also another different approaches that Buddha mentioned in citta-anupassana, dhamma-anupassana into this kind of practice.
And also, sometimes I just reflect, because it is dukkha also, isn't it, Bhante?
Definitely. Definitely.
I mean, this mental proliferation going on and on.
Yeah.
I sometimes say, this is dukkha. Why are we participating in dukkha?
Definitely. Actually, now in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, all these three aspects you understand is the aspects of the dukkha.
Yes.
The conditioned nature. Conditioned nature is the sankhata dukkha. Sankhara dukkha, sometimes we call. Sankhara dukkha. And the grossness or this heaviness is a dukkha. Because that is why, I mean, why am I suffering here? I have a better place to return back. So that is the kind of an encouragement Buddha is asking. So this present agitation is a dukkha. This present agitation is something gross. It's heavy. It's a burden.
Yes.
You feel burdened. So why don't you return back to that calm place? So it's a kind of a encouragement in a way.
Because actually, Bhante, for me, I'm meditation, I don't have to apply so many of that, but it is in the real life that I want to do it now, you know?
Yes.
Apply these principles, because we are all the time faced with all these mental thoughts, you know, that come rushing in when we come into a situation.
Yes, definitely. That's why, I mean, this whole teaching, we have to practically apply to our lives.
Yes, Bhante. We have to live the Dhamma.
Exactly. Yes.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
So I like to give everyone a chance to still ask some questions. We have 9 left.
Okay, seems there is no question. Then we can wind up, Jennifer, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct, Pante.
Okay. Okay, then thank you for your participation and presenting various questions. And we actually have accumulated a lot of merits in the discussing to the Buddha's teaching and to listening Dhamma. So we'll share all these merits with all the passed away relatives, whoever in need of merits, and we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavataca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam. Sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata jamhehi sambatam punya sampadam. Sambe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata jamhehi sambatam punya sampadam. Sambe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha jabummattha deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha jabummattha deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu desanam. Akasattha jabummattha deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatvayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.